Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. Here we go. It's another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. I'm David Summers, and here comes the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring and back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall, tree-top tall, with the Tennessee stud, Ron Fuller, in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. Hey, Ron, when we start the show today, I gotta ask you, because a couple of weeks ago, you started introducing a new name. We've been talking about Les Thatcher for quite a while. We know him as one of the commentators out of Knoxville, but you started introducing somebody else, Les Thornton. So you got two Lesses out there, which is more lesses than we can handle in one show. So surely
it's a little confusing, I guess, isn't it?
Make a distinction.
Thought about it, but and pretty strange. Another coincidence here is Les Thatcher was a junior heavyweight.
Right. Yes. You know?
So yeah. Well, Les Thatcher, obviously, he did the program, the Southeastern in Knoxville, for many, many years, from 75. To ride, well, he was there. Actually, I left. They kept him there for mm-hmm. a while. And, you know, and Les Thornton, he's a horse of a different color, let's say, man.
All right.
He's got up a long way from being Les Thatcher. What a tremendous athlete he is. And, we got a lot of good things in this one today, Dave, that are going to take us places we haven't been.
Oh, cool deal. And thanks for making that distinction, because when you said Les Thornton's name a couple of weeks ago, I thought, did he mean Thatcher? And I knew immediately you didn't, because you did make the distinction about what a wrestler he was. All right. So listen, I say this almost every week, but I think it's absolutely true, or I wouldn't say it. Your Studcaster really on a roll. It's like week after week, new fans are finding what many in the business think is one of the very best wrestling podcasts in the world.
Well, geez, I'm doing the best I can, I guess is a good way to put it. I'm doing the best I can to tell and record the story of professional wrestling, at least as far as my family's history is in it, concerned. I touch on a lot of other things, but I do the best I can, man, and I have a good time at it.
You know, you just hang in there and you'll get it right eventually, Ron. I tell you what, I think that's why it's so popular. It would be impossible for anyone that had not experienced what you have related to wrestling or lived through it to ever be able to explain it, and especially the way you do. We're so very lucky to have you and your commitment to the fans. I think that is awesome how much time you spend researching this show every week. And the sheer number of studcasts that you have done absolutely speaks for itself. Today's episode is number 366. 366. It's not just an episode number. That is how many one-hour studcasts that you've done. Over now 8 years of doing these, and I think that is absolutely amazing.
Well, I guess that's pretty close to a decade, right? You know, so the best part of it all, man, is concerning Studcast at this point, is the fact that the business part of owning two territories basically has ended about this point, where we are now with my most successful years still to come in the future. I'm covering as many aspects of the sport as possible, and now I'm looking forward to new ways to present them, man.
Well, I think that just comes easily for you. You certainly covered a lot on the last episode, and the response to your answer for the learning tree questions just have been unbelievable. You mentioned looking for new ways to present things. I think you mentioned that on the close of the last Studcast. So I'm interested to see where we go with that. All right, and where are we riding to get this thing on the trail today?
Well, we talked quite a bit last episode about something coming soon that is going to be making every Studcast better. And there's only one Southeastern Knoxville TV show that exists, basically. It was recorded in 1978, between the time the territory opened in 1974 and before 1980, the year that we are now discussing in each one of these Studcasts. So we talked about that last episode, the fact that there was no Southeastern TV shows existing. And that fact now is about to end, Dave. We are only a couple of months, September and October. By the time we get to November, we're going to be looking at TV shows from 1980.
Wow.
And we should have that those shows for quite a while after that, all through the rest of Southeastern's time before it becomes continental.
Okay, I remember that very well. It was, to me, it was the most exciting news about the future of Studcast that I've ever heard. You said we're going to begin to insert the actual interviews from the wrestlers 44 years ago, their voices, into every Studcast that we have a TV show for. I can't wait for that. That is going to sound so cool.
Well, I've got more good news, Dave. We're going to talk about a couple of other ideas I have to add to that one that I think fans are really going to like. And then we're going to find out, as we ride here into this next one, a lot more about the closing of the Southeastern Knoxville territory that happened on the last Studcast that we talked about, and why it happened, who was getting involved, what was going to happen, and when was it going to start. So we got to cover a lot of W's there. But we're going to find out a lot more about what happened in that try by the Georgia promoters to make Southeastern Knoxville successful. We're going to go back in the Southeastern Gulf Coast territory. After that, we got a spectacular card for this one, man. In fact, it was good enough that we raised the prices. A great TV show promoting that card. We'll talk about that. The results of the matches and the attendances, and after that, hopefully, we'll have another learning tree question.
Hey, and as I mentioned earlier, your learning tree answer stole the show last Studcast. I thought it was so cool. You have loaded this one for us again, Stud. All right, I hope we can get all of this in, and I guess we should start writing right away to cover all of this. So cinch up your saddle. Let's start with the good news you have for us on future Studcast.
Well, obviously, being able to put the actual interviews and more from TV shows recorded 44 years ago is going to totally change what I've been doing since Studcast started 7 years ago. It'll be the first time we've ever been able to insert some actual stuff from the time frame we're talking about. And I've been basically explaining everything that had to do with the TV show and all that, all these years, these first 7 years, and having to put into words what was coming out of the mouths of great stars. So thankfully, those days will soon be gone, and we'll be providing the original wrestling history to our audience for the first time.
Cool.
So because we're going to be down to talking about only one territory in each episode, I'll have spare time in each episode to do something completely new for Studcast. I have some ideas, but since I started these Studcasts, I have considered them your Studcast, meaning by yours, I mean exactly that. I want to open the door to the ideas from you, the fans, people out there listening. You're the people that's important to me. And I'd like to know what you'd like to hear and what is coming that I can call, you know. I'm thinking about calling this, actually, when this starts, I'm going to call it the new Studcast, because it's going to be totally different than what we have been doing for 7 years.
Cool. Okay.
So I now have more than 20,000 followers, Dave, on 3 Facebook sites and the Twitter or X site, it's called. And it's going to be a couple of months before the new Studcast begin. And I'd love for fans to bombard me, man, with ideas on my social media sites as to what they might like to hear when we start to do these new Studcasts.
You know, I don't know how you're going to keep up with it, but I think that's a great idea, Ron, with that many fans. You have some of the most knowledgeable fans ever. That could be a problem, too, because they hit you. I know they hit you all the time on your social media with a lot of different questions. And you definitely do these Studcasts exclusively for your fans. So where do you want to begin this one?
Well, right now, Dave, I want to create a totally new Studcast with a new format that will definitely contain only one element at this point. I know exactly what I want to do, and then I'm going to have to add some other things to it. Each episode is going to still focus on the one wrestling company at this time, which was Southeastern Gulf Coast. Now, there is no Southeastern Knoxville anymore. That company is closed down. So when we start with the new Studcast, it's going to be in November of this year. And it's going to be a first ever event. We're going to be doing the first one on the night that Birmingham, Alabama opened up in 1980. Mm-hmm. Wow, pretty far back, you know. So in every Studcast, we're going to be announcing the weekly Southeastern card. We'll keep doing that as we always have. We'll discuss the weekly TV shows and cover the results of the matches, and we'll talk about the attendances in certain of the buildings. And other than that, I'm basically looking for ideas from fans to provide the content for the rest of the weekly new Studcast once they begin.
I think that's going to come easy for you. All right. I think the weekly Southeastern card and all that that involves usually covers about half of the Studcast. So you are opening the door to fans for their thoughts about how to basically cover the other 30 minutes of content for this Studcast.
That's exactly what I'm saying, man. I want to make this happen in the next 2 months to coincide with the first new Studcast that will contain the original interviews from the first Southeastern Gulf Coast TV show, which was recorded in November of 1980.
Okay, so, I mean, that's huge news. So you want to begin now getting suggestions from fans about how to fill half of each new Studcast with great content by, say, November of this year, I think you said, and then they can send their suggestions to any of your Facebook sites, Twitter, or which is now called X. So they can send them to any Facebook site or any or your X site.
Right. That's correct, man. And I want to go back to Knoxville now, okay, where there was no more wrestling, Southeastern wrestling, and explain why. Who, what, and when did things change so fast and dramatically in the first week of September 1980? I think fans are going to find this little bit of information fascinating. We're about to go deep inside the kayfabe sport, man, where few fans have ever been. This story had already begun in the month of August 1980. So let's start with why. Why did the Georgia owners decide to sell Southeastern? Now, that's pretty simple. In the 10 months since they had purchased the territory, they had lost nothing but, as Jim Barnett said one time in Australia in a meeting I was in 1973, they had lost nothing but money, money, money. And those words were used to describe the new crew when he said that in 1973, when I'm sitting in an office in the Chevron Hotel in downtown Sydney. You know, he said, you know, that he was looking at a new crew that was going to make a lot of that for him, a lot of money. But 7 years later, his experience in Tennessee had lost him a lot of just that, money, money, money. So the next part of this failed Southeastern question was who? Who wanted to buy a territory that had not been the same since May of 1979 when the Knoxville War started? The answer turned out to be two very successful wrestlers in the nearby Mid-Atlantic territory of Jim Crockett Sr. So the Crockett family, they weren't interested in Southeastern, but they were fully supporting two of their stars, guys that had worked for them for practically as long as they'd been in the business, especially one of them. And those two guys were Blackjack Mulligan and Ric Flair. And Mulligan was 6 feet, 8 inches tall. He weighed over 300 pounds.
Wow.
He was the father of Barry Windham. And he had several other family members that were in the sport that went on to greatness, just like Barry did. Ric Flair had spent much of his career in the Carolinas. And at this point, in 1980, he was soon to become the next NWA world champion.
Okay, so Ric Flair and Blackjack Mulligan bought the Southeastern territory from the Georgia promoters. All right, when did that happen, and when did you find out about it?
Well, it happened probably sometime in the month of September of 1980, where we are right now in this particular episode. And nobody notified me that it had been so. In fact, I got a call from Ole Anderson in September of 1980, and he just basically told me that Jim Barnett wanted to send me the balance owed to me for the Southeastern territory. Our contract was over a 5-year period of time to receive that money. And he just basically said that Jim wants to pay it all to you, Ron. I had no idea what was going on up there in Tennessee. And basically, I'll be honest with you, I really didn't care. I was busy working and booking, and I just thought Birmingham and making our Southeastern territory rock, man. I mean, it was my focus totally.
Okay, so did either Flair or Mulligan have any experience running a territory, and why would either of them buy it if they knew how bad business was and had been there?
That's a couple of good questions there, Dave. But, you know, I don't think either of them had any experience in booking or running a territory. They were just basically wrestlers. And just about everybody in the sport knew that when I came there, I had no experience in booking or running a territory either when I bought it from John Kazana. And somehow I managed to make a huge success out of it. So Flair and Mulligan were being backed by the owners of one of the best territories in the world, the Mid-Atlantic Territory, huge territory owned by the Crockett family. And I doubt any of that group expected to fail, to be honest with you. So let's discuss what was going to happen with this relationship. Like I said, I never knew anything about what was going on there up in Tennessee. And I didn't even know Jim Barnett and Fred Ward had sold it. I only found out some of that information from my good friend Ed Harrison, that provides me with a lot of the cards and things from a lot of my territories. And then I only learned this in the last few weeks from Ed Harrison. And I was shocked to hear that the last Tennessee card that we talked about in the last studcast was their last Southeastern event ever.
Wow. All right. So when did the new group take over and start running matches?
Well, I recently found out the answer to that. None of them ran matches at all in the month of September. There was no wrestling at all. It just disappeared. Imagine that. You're watching your TV, and they still had the TV show on, but there was no matches during the month of September at all. And I assume that the first shows that were run by Mulligan and Flair didn't happen until October of 1980. And I say that because Mid-Atlantic, their newspaper ads were running in the Knoxville newspaper for the first time ever in October. So I have no idea what the actual relationship was between the Crocketts, Flair, and Mulligan, but it's going to be something we will cover in future studcasts when appropriate, man.
Okay, you were right, Ron. This subject is absolutely fascinating. An entire territory was under the control of the third owners in less than a year. All right, so now let's go south. Let's get down to Pensacola and find out who and what was on the card, set it up for the last southeastern territory down on the Gulf Coast.
Well, this card, man, as I mentioned earlier, was, I don't know, pretty spectacular, and basically was unlike any other card we had ever booked. We did something that was totally different. We were not able to get into the big Mobile main arena, and that obviously cost us a lot of money, thousands of dollars, you know, but we made up for it by we added seats in the three major buildings that we'd been in. We were already had packed those buildings out, but we were able to manage to add a few extra seats beyond what we'd ever had before, and we raised the price for this event $1 per person in the cities of Montgomery, Mobile, and Dothan. The cities, all three of those, had that same card. So the opening match says it all about this card. The opening match was a Bob Armstrong and Randy Rose, managed by the Big C. And this was right after Bob and Joe had won the Southeastern Tag Belts a week before. And so this card opens up with a special challenge match between Bob Armstrong and Randy Rose, managed by Big C. The next match was a most unusual 9-man elimination match. And those elimination matches were where all the wrestlers came to the ring. They surrounded the ring. You had to keep your hand on the middle rope so that you could be tagged in at any time. Two wrestlers were picked to start the match, and you could tag out by slapping them. When you were in the ring, you could slap anybody's hand that you wanted to, and they had to come into the ring and wrestle whoever was in the ring at that time. That eliminated you from basically, you had to return when you lost. You had to go back to the dressing room. But it was pretty, really interesting match because, match continued until only one man remained unbeaten. He obviously wins the match. And in this particular elimination match, that man was going to get a $5,000 prize for that night. And the contestants were Plowboy Frazier, Robert, my brother, Jerry Stubbs, Norvell Austin, Charlie Cook, Sweet Brown Sugar, Ricky Gibson, Tom Stanton, and the returning Billy Spears.
Wow. I love those matches. When they would come along, they definitely got your attention. So sometimes they would last for more than an hour, and tag team wrestlers would sometimes end up against each other. I thought that was a really cool aspect of those matches. All right, so what was next, Stud?
Well, it was the Southeastern Championship match between the champion, Mongolian Stomper, managed by the Big C, and he was going to be defending against me. Then there was a Canadian Lumberjack on this card. The wrestlers around the ring with belts to whip either of the two opponents back into the ring if they decided they wanted to try to go to the dressing room early or whatever. And it was Ron Bass versus Joe LeDuc. The main event was the match everybody basically had been waiting for, the World Junior Heavyweight Championship. Tony Charles, the new United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, was going to be facing the World Junior Champion, Les Thornton. And the special referee was Jerry Stubbs, the man who had just lost the United States Junior title to Tony Charles the week before.
An absolutely tremendous card. No wonder you raised prices for it. It had a little bit of everything in it, no doubt. Okay, Armstrong and Rose in a special challenge match, which could have been a main event anywhere in the country. A 9-man elimination match with $5,000 to the winner, a Southeastern Championship match, a Canadian Lumberjack match, and a World Junior title match. All of that takes place in one night. I can't wait to hear what was on the TV show for this card. I mean, and listen, I got to be honest. That sounds like a pay-per-view any day. So we'll get to that. Let's do that after we do the break. We'll set all that up and make it happen again. Hey, Studcast fans, why not take a ride with the Stud? There is so much fascinating entertainment on Rod's website at tnstud.com. Every Studcast ever done, including this one, 43 three-hour Super Studcast with some of the greatest stars of all time still alive and fabulous stories about those no longer with us, like Andre the Giant, Ron Wright, Bob Armstrong, Terry Funk, Kevin Sullivan, just to name a few. Each Super Studcast is only $2.99 when you click Super Studcast. His stud store is a journey in itself with his fantastic novel, Brutus, that can be autographed by Ron to you personally. With free shipping, saddle up for history with the Stud. All right, we are back. Episode number 366. This is called Charles versus Thornton, World Junior Title. All right, so what a great card this was. The first week in September of 1980, it was in three arenas on Labor Day, Monday, September 1st in Montgomery, Alabama, the next day in Mobile, and 3 days after that on Friday night in Dothan, Alabama. So how did the TV show for this great card open up, Stud? Set it up for us.
All right. This one opened with Charlie Papp reminding fans how the TV show closed the week before. That was where he announced that the World Junior Heavyweight Champion Les Thornton was going to actually be on TV this week on this program. And as promised, he was not only in the building, but he was ready to wrestle for the first time ever for Southeastern on the television show. So the studio crowd obviously liked that. There was a little, the big roar from them. And they'd been waiting for a couple of weeks at this point to see this worldwide wrestling star who had basically recovered from a little injury he had. And then Charlie took it to another level. He announced that also Major Traction was going to be coming for fans this week in the arenas. Then he announced that there was going to be a 9-man elimination match with $5,000 going to the winner. And he announced that today, for the very first time, right here on TV, there was going to be a 5-man elimination match with a $1,000 prize going to the winner on television that day. So, and then he said it would be the first match of the day. And obviously that got another pop from the studio crowd.
So Charlie had gotten two pops from the studio crowd in the first 2 minutes of the show. I can just see him grinning right now. This TV was off to a great start. So who were the five men in the first ever TV elimination match?
Well, it was my brother Robert, Plowboy Frazier, Norvell Austin, Charlie Cook, and the newcomer, Tom Stanton. And we'd only had a few of these matches in the Southeastern Gulf Coast in the first 2 years there. And this was the first one ever that we had on TV. And it was a great way of showing and kind of explaining as the match went on how this match worked. And for that to add to the flavor of what was happening here, we sent Bob Armstrong out there on the set with Charlie to do commentary with him for this first elimination match. And Bob was obviously the first perfect guy for explaining everything.
All right, so with only five wrestlers in this elimination match, it should have kept it fairly short, I'm assuming, Stud.
Yeah, you never really knew about these matches, and sometimes they could go a long, long time. But it wasn't, this one wasn't real short. After about 15 minutes gone in the match, Charlie had to basically send it off to a commercial break, had to take a commercial break. And when he did, he told, obviously, the fans that if the match ended during this commercial break, that we were still recording the match and we would play the ending of the match if they ended in the commercial break. So basically they weren't going to miss anything if there was an end that they didn't get to see. So then Robert, at this point, Plowboy and Tom Stanton were still in this. Only two guys had been eliminated in the first 15 minutes. And so when they went to commercial break, they were the three guys that were in the ring. And a few minutes, basically it would seem like only 2 or 3 minutes, after they came back to action, Rob got a pin on Stanton. So that left just Rob and Plowboy. Mm-hmm. And Plowboy's buddy Floyd, who had been standing out there beside Plowboy the entire match. So when Stanton got eliminated, Plowboy was the only man left. And so, you know, Rob had been wrestling. He'd been in that ring for quite a bit of time. He had beaten somebody before Stanton, then ended up beating Stanton. And so as soon as Plowboy saw that Rob had won over Stanton, well, he just shot up in the ring, man. He was trying to take advantage of a very tired Rob, man, for the win, and he wanted that money, wanted that $1,000. And so, but Rob kind of surprised him. Plowboy shot in there, and Rob was ready for him. In fact, he went after Plowboy, and that forced Floyd then, his little buddy, I call him, out there standing on the floor to do something. So, you know, they were kind of rolling down the ropes there about where Floyd was. And Floyd reached in there and tried to trip Rob, but he accidentally tripped Plowboy instead. Rob dived on top of him. He got the three count. He rolled out of the ring and he went straight to the set with Bob and Charlie. And Bob, as always, being the great guy he was, congratulated him, man. And Bob kind of went on back to the back at that point. And Charlie presented Rob with a $1,000 check for winning the elimination match. The studio crowd applauded, obviously, with approval. And then they booed Plowboy and Floyd because they're still in there complaining to the referee about how they lost.
All right. Was that the end of the first two segments on the TV show?
No, actually it wasn't. So I joined Rob and Charlie at the set. Rob was, you know, excited with the win, but he was also pretty blown up. So Charlie and I watched the video. Rob didn't say much. He was trying to catch his breath. And it was a video of the match the week before, an I Quit match between Rob and I against the Mongolian Stomper and Big C, where you had to say that you gave up over the PA system. And so the video started out by showing me chasing the Stomper back to his dressing room. And as about that same time, when the camera went back to the ring, it showed the Big C took advantage of the referee, knocked him down from behind, and then, of all people, Plowboy Frazier arrived at the ring, and he came sliding in there. He attacked Rob from behind. Rob was going after Big C, and then he just grabbed Rob and held on to him. Big C loaded his black glove, and he blasted him with it, man, and knocked him out cold. Plowboy disappeared just about as quickly as he'd arrived at the ring, and so the match was supposed to end when someone said that they quit or gave up. They had to do it over the arena sound system. Pretty embarrassing type of match, basically. And but the referee, he didn't even see the Plowboy's interference. So he just went on. He saw the Rob laying there and Big C standing over top of him. And, you know, so he started to raise Rob's hand, and you know, to see if he was going to be able to. Obviously, he's not going to be able to give up because he was knocked out. So Rob's hand dropped 3 times, and you know, so Rob never had to say, never said he quit or anything else because he was unconscious. He couldn't say anything. So the referee had no choice but declare the Stomper and the Big C the winners.
Wow. Okay. To me, it sounds like Robert and Plowboy had already had a problem before Robert won this TV's elimination match. All right. Weren't they both in that 9-man elimination match for a $5,000 prize the next week?
Yes, they were. They were 2 of those 9 contestants in that match. So, and after catching his breath, Rob finally was able to talk a little bit, and he let everybody know that he was planning on getting that $5,000. He'd already got $1,000 for an afternoon's work. And he was going to look at that, hoping to get the $5,000 during the course of the week.
Well, I'm sure he felt like he was on a roll and had a little bit of momentum when he picked up that $1,000. All right, so was it time for the personality profile by now, Stud?
Yeah, and this one was a very unusual profile, man. In fact, it was, I would call it an all-English affair. Tony Charles had won back his United States Junior Heavyweight belt the week before from our boy Cherry Stubbs, and he was facing the World Junior Heavyweight Champion Les Thornton for his belt. And so Charlie had both of these guys on the profile. Both of them had their belts with them, and they each sat down on one side of the other of Charlie. Les Thornton and Tony Charles were very familiar with each other, both being Englishmen, of course. Tony grew up in England, and so did Les Thornton. And in fact, Tony Charles had two wins over Thornton in Tony's illustrious career, man. And there was some talk between them about those two matches. Thornton had a remark in there about that the wins were a long time ago. I remember Thornton talking about it. He said, yeah, I lost to you twice, Tony, a long time ago. And he goes, but that's never going to happen again. So, you know, but wow, Les Thornton was a cool dude. I mean, he really had his stuff together. And so he wasn't a big heel as a champion. He was a good guy. And you could tell by what was going on between the two of them in this mutual interview that there was a lot of respect between the two of those guys. There was, however, a fly in the ointment, man, this whole match. Hmm. You know, and that was Jerry Stubbs. You know, because he was the man that, you know, and that Jerry had just lost to Tony Charles.
Yeah.
For his U.S. junior title to him, and that's how Tony got the match. So over the last 2 months, Jerry Stubbs had become a thorn in just about everybody's side. I mean, he had just changed dramatically as a wrestler, and his attitude. He was a true heel at this point. And so he had done a short interview earlier in the day to talk about, as the referee of this match, how he was going to handle it in the championship match. he thought he was a big wheel, man. Jerry took every opportunity to make an ass of himself. And so Charlie introduced that video to Charles and Thornton. And Stubbs said right off the bat, you know, he said, I was robbed of the opportunity to face Thornton by that little limey. Tony Charles, you could use the word limey, which was a definite insult to both those guys. The English men did not like being called limeys. And, you know, so, but Stubbs didn't care. He knew it, and he laughed about it when he said it. It made it even worse. And so he said, you know, he hadn't decided who was going to win the match between the two of them. And he said something about he hadn't slept thinking about the grand opportunity this match presented to him. He said, to be able now to decide, for me to decide which man I want to win. and he continued then saying he knew if Les Thornton won the match, he said, he's going to be coming back 5 weeks later for another title defense. So, you know, he kept saying that he would soon decide which one of the two he was going to allow to win. And then he was going to take the World Junior Heavyweight title from that guy 5 weeks from now.
He was definitely in the driver's seat and obviously enjoying every minute of it. All right, so how did that profile end?
Well, how could either of those guys be happy knowing that they had a referee for their world title match that was still trying to decide who he wanted to win the match before it even started? I mean, it was a really odd situation. When we wanted to do something different, just to see what we could do and what would happen. And I knew fans, basically, no matter who won this match, was going to see one of the greatest matches in history. I was looking forward to seeing it myself. I mean, the crowd, I love this English style of wrestling. And knowing that unique style of both these guys from another part of the world, what really got my attention was on the end of the profile. At the end of the profile, they stood up and shook hands with each other.
Wow. I'm very sorry to have missed a world championship match like that. Wow. I mean, that's crazy. All right. So who was in the next TV segment?
Well, Joe LeDuc and Bob Armstrong, they came out. They were carrying their new Southeastern Tag Championship belts. They had just won them the week before. They joined Charlie, and they watched their, I call it the last shot victory, because it was their last shot title match, which meant if they lost, they weren't ever going to get a chance to beat Rose and Bass again. So they had won this last shot match, and they watched it, you know, and wow, the fans went nuts. They had not seen it, and so they really, really enjoyed watching them win the championship from Ron Bass and Randy Rose. And you could hardly hear what they were saying above the roar of the studio audience. I mean, they were really into it. The video ended with Bob Armstrong putting his sleeper hold on Randy Rose for the win. And about that same time, Joe LeDuc pulled his leather belt out of his wrestling pants, and he chased Ron Bass all the way back to the dressing room. I mean, they were shooting it. You could see them fight their way through the crowd, and he was wearing Ron Bass's butt out with that belt.
Wow. Oh, so, God.
So LeDuc and Bass were coming back on this tremendous card in a Canadian lumberjack match, which meant that the ring was going to be surrounded by a lot of wrestlers, all of them be carrying belts, and they were going to be there to whip one or the other of them or both of them back into the ring when they decided to leave. Bob Armstrong was facing Randy Rose in a special challenge match in the opening of this great card.
Okay, so who was in the next match on that segment?
Well, it was a very angry Bass and Rose, man. And they had sit and watched that video, too, that the fans were all screaming and so into, of them losing their belts. And having just watched that video, and Big C with them at ringside, he was screaming at them before they ever rang the bell for this tag match that he wanted them to punish these poor, unfortunate opponents that these guys had. Wow, I mean, and this match didn't last very long at all. Randy Rose, he almost tore a guy's head off his shoulders, man, with one of those clotheslines. And Ron Bass power slammed his guy, gave him one of those Texas stampedes, man, run across the ring with him on his shoulder and dived on top of him. I mean, wow, it was. They made a statement, basically, about how they were going to handle things from there on.
Wow. Okay. I think it is time for the World Junior Heavyweight Champion to show his stuff. Les Thornton. Let's do that.
Okay. Well, it certainly was, man. He was and the new United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, Tony Charles, joined Charlie at the set to watch this match. And it was fascinating, man, to watch the difference between wrestling in that part of the world. Europe and English wrestling as compared to the United States wrestling was, oh, it was a great deal of difference. All the and what they did in England that was so different was they had all these unique throws that Tony Charles used to always say, you know, I caught him with the throw. You know, you know, that there were so many different styles and so many different ways that these guys would win matches with these amazing moves. And so Thornton was wrestling against Sweet Brown Sugar in this match on television. And which meant he's wrestling one of the best junior heavyweights in the world right there on TV. And he got himself a big win, man, over Sweet Brown Sugar right there.
Yeah, wow. And all right, so the word throws is just another word. That's how Tony Charles would say it. It's another word for move, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Another word for a spectacular move.
You would say, what a move. And Tony Charles would say, what a throw.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What a great TV show, by the way, this was, and lead up to one of the most unusual cards I have seen so far since doing the Studcast. All right, so tell us, Stud, what happened the next week in the only Southeastern territory left in the country?
Well, fans knew basically what they were going to have a memorable night, from the very first match. Obviously, you got Bob Armstrong facing Randy Rose, managed by Big C, in the very first match. And, wow, this match ended up being, it was called a special challenge match, and it ended up being a lot more than that. It ended up being truly special. The Big C was forced to get involved in the match, and then he lost his black glove to Bob Armstrong. Bob got his glove off of his hand and took it to the dressing room. So for the first time ever, the following week, Bob was going to give Randy Rose and Big C one chance to get his black glove back. And I might as well go ahead and tell everybody that one of the matches in the following week is going to be Big C's glove on top of a 20-foot pole. And be Bob and Randy Rose, whoever gets the glove can keep it. So that had turned into a lot more than just that match. It turned into a great match the following week. In the 9-man elimination match for the $5,000 prize, it was the second match on the card. And this time it lasted almost 90 minutes. Nine guys lasted an hour and a half. And it ended with Robert and Plowboy Frazier, the last two guys in the ring, and Floyd, obviously, standing on the outside. Plowboy always had him there as his second. He called him his second. I think he was more valet. So Robert was about to beat Plowboy, about to get the full leg lock on him, and Floyd jumped up on the apron ring, drew the referee to him. Obviously, the referee had to go and say, get down off the apron or whatever. Plowboy took that opportunity, pulled something out of his tights, and he knocked Rob out, man. Covered him for the win.
Wow. Wow.
So I was watching the match, and I went down to the ring to try to explain to the referee what had happened. The announcer was about to give the check to Plowboy. And I was like, no, that ain't going to work. You know what I mean? He ain't going to get this money. So I grabbed the check and tore it up right in front of him and Floyd, right? But I should have probably been watching my back, because I was in the next match, and along came the Stomper and Big C. They jumped me from behind. They put the boots to me, and they kicked the heck out of me pretty decently, man. And so Ricky Gibson and Norvell Austin came down to the ring, and they kind of got those guys off of me. They helped Rob get back to the dressing room, and the referee had managed to get Stomper and the Big C off me temporarily, but they insisted. They were already there. They had the belt there. They said, let's start the match, right? and that wasn't quite the way it should have been, But I wasn't in any shape to complain too much, so they rang the bell, and boy, Stomper got right on me, and I fought back as best I could, but I never really had a chance, man. They got to me good before the match ever started. And when the match ended shortly, the Stomper and the Big C, they paraded around the ring, Stomper holding the belt up over his head, and it turned out basically to be a bad night for the Fuller Brothers. So the next match was going to provide a lot of whipping, I guess, a good way of putting it, for Joe LaDuke and Ron Bass. Eight wrestlers went to the ring with belts. Both LaDuke and Bass were bloodied, and that wasn't unusual in their matches. But in this one, they were not only bloodied, but they were beaten like dogs. And uh, know, they got thrown out of the ring several times or went out intentionally. Mm-hmm. Both of them got disqualified. Rob and I, we didn't go out to that match, but we listened to the roar of the crowd in the dressing room. It had to be a brutal match. And those things were always brutal, and that one really had to be a brutal one. Hmm. And then the main event, it was time for the main event, and the main event was fantastic. I mean, I watched every bit of that. Fans got to see a great wrestling match between two of, at that time, the best wrestlers in the world, junior heavyweights, no doubt about it. Jerry Stubbs did everything he could in this match to disrupt the match. And he leaned heavily toward Thornton during the entire match. But both wrestlers, they just started about halfway through the match to basically ignore him as much as they possibly could. And he was trying to steal the show, for one thing, and he was also just trying to make it difficult for them. So Les Thorne didn't wrestle at all like a heel. He was a babyface through the entire match. And both he and Tony, many, many times in the match, they ended up in the ropes. They had clean breaks. They shook hands throughout most of the match. And that was absolutely phenomenal, this match. And it went to a one-hour time limit draw. By the end of the match, Jerry Stubbs had more heat than he ever had. I mean, fans wanted to kill him. And not just the fans, but so did Thornton and Charles, right? I mean, you could understand there how distracting that was to have a referee like that during the match. So when the bell sounded to end the match, Thornton and Charles shook hands. Stubbs had to raise both their hands to signify there was a draw match and that the time limit had run out. And before he could leave the ring, both of them grabbed him. And they took turns giving him those gigantic throws, man, one after another, until he couldn't stand up. I mean, and the crowd was going nuts. They loved it, man. And the two referees, there were three referees on that card that night, and the other two had finally come down, and they finally got the guys off of him, and they had to carry Jerry Stubbs back to the dressing room.
Wow. I mean, I would have loved to have seen that. What an ending to a world title match, no doubt. Both wrestlers attacking the referee. So how about attendances in the three major markets that everybody got to see on that same card?
Well, thankfully, we were able to add a few hundred seats in all three of the arenas. Montgomery's building added 300 seats, and that brought that to a total of 5,300. We had 5,000 had been a sellout there, and now 5,300 was going to be a new record for a sellout. Dothan added about 300 seats, too, that were down there on the floor.
Wow.
And that brought to a new record of 5,500 we could put into the Farm Center.
Yeah.
And then in Mobile and Expo Hall, it was always 5,600, but somehow they managed to get 400 seats into that 5,600 seat building, and that put 6,000 into the Expo Hall for the first time ever.
Wow. Okay.
So the total attendances for all three of those buildings was 16,800. That's a new record for those three cities. Hmm. Then you add that dollar raise in the ticket prices. That added another $16,800 to the box office record as well. So pretty substantial week, man.
Man, I guess all the guys had to be happy with that and the result of that, and everybody, the attendance in those three arenas. I think that is so cool. This has been another incredible Studcast, setting records in three cities with a spectacular card. Hey, I'm sorry, but we're not going to have time for a learning tree question this week. This one has been something else. I never know where we're going to be headed anymore, but it's always something interesting when we get there, no doubt about it. All right, so where are we going to be riding next week, Ron?
Well, we'll be going back to Birmingham this time, and we're going to take a close-up look at where we were in 1980. We're going to talk about that big billboard buy that we did from Lamar back months earlier that was just about to start the middle of September, go into the middle of November, where Birmingham gets its first night out, its first Southeastern wrestling matches. And we'll follow up on that, and we'll talk a little bit about the TV situation there, having the two TVs in that same market. Most unusual, didn't see that happen very often. So we'll discuss some of that, too. And our next Southeastern Gulf Coast card, it's going to be almost as good as this record one in this studcast. We're going to go back to seven matches. We only had five on this last card. We're going to go back to seven matches. And it's going to include the debut of the 1981 Rookie of the Year, Brad Armstrong.
Wow.
Okay. He'll make his wrestling debut.
Cool.
In that next card that we'll be talking about. And hopefully we'll have enough time for a learning tree question and on that studcast as well.
I tell you what, this has been so much fun on this studcast. I never know where we're headed anymore, but it is always an interesting ride. Hey, folks, you know how to get hooked up with Ron on social media. Find Ron at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud, on Facebook. You can like and follow him there. Automatically become friends with a living legend. On Twitter or X, he's Ron Fuller Welch. You can follow him there also and keep up with everything. Check out the fantastic website, tnstud.com, tnstud.com. This studcast is going to be there with every studcast ever done. I mean, they're all there. It's pages and pages and pages of studcast. His stud store is where you can get 43 super studcast, four different 8x10 photos, the best-selling novel Brutus personally autographed to you. You can also subscribe to Ron's YouTube channel. It's called Southeastern Rewind. Find hundreds of hours of classic old school wrestling entertainment. 441 total videos. The last 144 studcasts, Ask the Stud shows, and Short Rides with Stud are there also. Go back 1 year or more. Discover fantastic stud stories with worldwide stars. Studcast archive stories. Tell Me More fan question shows. Superstars of the past shows. And much more. That's YouTube, Southeastern Rewind. It's the best deal in wrestling. All right, any final comments today, Stud?
Yeah, I want to thank everybody, as always, man, for their support and the kind words about what we've been doing here lately. A lot of people, new fans out there, and appreciate your being with us. And please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers with an O, 955. And on Twitter, also known as X, it's Dave_Doin, which is short for Dave's Doing Stuff. On Instagram, it's instagram.com/DavidSummersProductions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This studcast is a David Summers production. For Tennessee Stud, LLC. Thanks for joining us today for this historic studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.